Welcome to another edition of Business Builders Roundtable, where a good idea, just one, might make all the difference. In this interview, we will talk with Arthur Greeno, a Chick-fil-A multi-restaurant franchise operator. You will learn about his reputation for creating what he calls remarkable marketing events, as well as other important thoughts about business building. We hope you're able to take something away from this interview that can help you continue to build your own business.
I want to welcome everyone to this edition of the Business Builders Roundtable, where one new idea, just one, could make all the difference. A general format is to interview a business builder or someone who has been there, done that, and has done something of value to share that can contribute to all the other business builders who might be listening. Before I introduce our special guest for today, I want you to know about the ways you can interact with me and our guest for each session. If you've already registered, and some of you have the call-in number and participant code to get you in on the live call. We'll send updates to you from time to time for any future calls as they are scheduled, and so that you can have an opportunity to participate on those as well. To register, simply go to the website, rodgiles.com, that's RODGILES.com, and submit your information. Then you can join us on the calls and be ready for any future calls as they come up. We also have a private blog site where we can interact in between calls. We can ask questions, give your take on the interview, or even suggest a guest you'd like to hear from. Yes, you need to register for that site as well. So please go to rodgiles.com. Give me your information so I can get that get those links to you. We want to encourage everyone who is a business builder to participate. So remember, one good tip or suggestion, just one, might make all the difference for you. One more point at this time in our conversation, all live callers are on silent to minimize the background noise. We will open up for questions later on, and I'll tell you how you can do that at that point in time. So without any further ado, let me introduce our guest for this call, Arthur Greeno. Arthur, we're glad to have you with us.
I'm glad to be here. Now, do I need to silence my phone? Because I called in.
No, you're fine. Just anybody
okay.
Else? I have a panel in front of me, and anyone else who calls in, we'll just click mute on them, and then you and I can talk uninhibited. I guess that's the term. Well, Arthur, I understand. Well, I know for a fact because I've read your book. You are an author. Arthur is an author. Speaker, we just talked briefly about that, and just so happens that you are one of the few Chick-fil-A multi-restaurant franchisees in the country. I'm reading right off the cover of your book here. Anything else you'd like us to know about you as we get started? Blood type, waist size, just anything.
I hold two Guinness World Records. If that's of any interest to anyone, I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
I hold two Guinness World Records, and I have six kids.
Six kids. Well, that doesn't sound like a record to me, but I guess we can talk about the other two. But it sounds like you're pretty busy as it is with work and family life. Well, the title of your book is Dysfunctional Inspiration, A Backroads Journey to Success. So what are you telling us with your title here?
Well, you know, as I sit down and I coach a lot of people, I get all kinds of reasons on why people cannot succeed. And when I was first getting married, my beautiful wife and I were sitting in a counselor's chair and discussing with them, and they told me that I had come from a dysfunctional family, and I had never heard the term dysfunctional family before, and so I actually took offense to it. I was like, what are you talking about? And so he kind of illustrated to me how My wife had come from a family that had a mother and father that you know, had never gotten a divorce, and you know, and it was interesting because I grew up with, you know, my parents got a divorce, and there was a lot of just unique things that happened in my family. I thought it was normal. And yeah. so you know, it was a number of years later that I learned that I was dysfunctional. And but I wrote the title for the book because, you know, it doesn't matter what your circumstances are, it doesn't matter what you came from, you have the ability to choose success.
Yeah, yeah. Well, coming from what you describe as a dysfunctional family system, I guess is a good way to describe it, what are some of the things that you took away that really have kind of impacted your approach to business?
Well, one of the major things that I took away is, who do you surround yourself with? That is so, so important. And at a very young age, I realized that because the type of environment that I came from was a situation where there was a lot of there was a lot of substance abuse. There was a lot of, you know, my parents got separated at a young age and later divorced. And I was looking at the dynamics and looking at how unhappy everyone was. And I said, you know what, that's not what I want in my life. I want something different. And something, you know, something that Albert Einstein once said, which was, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Right.
And I remember thinking, I want something different. Maybe I need to change who I'm hanging out with. And so at about 14 years old, I started looking for who do I want to be like when I grow up? And so I started looking around and looking at these different kids who their families were successful, I guess would be a good terminology, or that they seemed to have it together where they were getting grades that were average or above. And at the time, I wasn't getting average grades. I was barely hanging on. And so at that point, I decided to go ahead and change that. And in business, that is so much the case. In fact, I remember when I wrote that book, Dysfunctional Inspiration, when I got done writing, I don't hang out with a bunch of authors. It was just kind of a, you know, I wanted to write the story because I wanted to share it with my team, my employees, my kids, and others. And I remember writing the story and thinking, I need to have some people write this, or I'm sorry, not write this, but read it so I can get their input on it, because sometimes you can't see your blind spots.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find anyone to read it. I mean, I sent it out to about 12 guys, and one person read it who actually wasn't a very good friend of mine. But I'm in the middle of writing another book right now, and I'm getting towards the end of it, and I've noticed that over the last couple of years, the people, even some of the people that I hang out with, because I'm an author and because I tend to talk to a lot of people about those kinds of things now, I have a list of about 5 different authors, and I said, hey, do you guys mind reading the book? And they were just they said, absolutely. And I told my wife the other night, I was very surprised that every one of them said yes. And because these are very highly, highly successful people that are also writers, and some of them have written books that have made it to the movies, and I was just very surprised. Gosh. But it's really about who you surround yourself with.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
excellent.
So that's one.
I would imagine that surrounding yourself and getting the feedback from other authors is probably going to have an impact on the way you write. Is that?
Oh, absolutely. Especially since I'm not. I feel that I'm a decent writer, but it doesn't come naturally to me. I mean, you know. What I do naturally is I help orchestrate the killing of chickens for Chick-fil-A. That was really a crude way to put it, I guess. I apologize. but you know, I work with Chick-fil-A, and I do a lot of other things. But the writing was something that, you know, it was kind of just a necessity of, you know, I want to get my story out there, so I did it. So I never thought I'd be put in this position, but it was really neat to say, you know, over the last couple of years, I've been able to really look at who am I surrounding myself with, and how is it serving me at this point?
Right.
And to where I can call these people and say, would you mind taking a look at my book? And they have. And so it's a principle that I've, at different points in my life, I've been able to look at and say, who's influencing me now? And whether it was my friends in high school or when I first became an owner with Chick-fil-A, I was very green. I had never run a business before. I had never had a business class before. And I got involved with Chick-fil-A, but I needed to learn. So I started calling all these owners that were what they would consider great veteran operators, guys who have been doing this for a long time. And they and every one of them, every single one of them said, yes, I'd be happy to meet with you. So I would go to their place of business, or sometimes they'd come in to me, and we would just sit down and look at my business model, and say, well, you know, if I were you, I would do this differently, or I would not do this, or I would not even touch that. And so, you know, I am kind of a cultivation of a lot of different people influencing my life, as I think everybody is.
Yeah, kind of a mosaic of who you surrounded yourself with. Well, that's an excellent point that you made. Let's talk a bit about Chick-fil-A. What drew you to, as you say, killing chickens? now, I know that's not true. We should clarify that. We don't want PETA coming down on our heads.
Right.
But what attracted you initially to Chick-fil-A, and how did that go?
Well, what happened for me with Chick-fil-A is I was working at Chick-fil-A as a team member.
Uh-huh.
I had started at one of the stores I currently own in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was working there, my family kind of went through an extreme dynamic. And my younger sister had passed away.
Mm.
And I remember at the time, we drove down to Dallas, Texas from Tulsa, and that's where the accident was. I mean, it was extremely stressful for me for a number of reasons. I was, at the time, trying to put myself through college. My family did not have a whole lot of money, even to the point where I was the one who ended up paying for a funeral because I had credit and no one else had credit. And I came back, and I was pretty high strung. And the owner operator at the time said, "You know what, Arthur, you need a break." And so he encouraged me to go to do a grand opening for another Chick-fil-A that was opening at this point in St. Louis. And it was really just a time for me to get away, go and work at a place making overtime, which was a big deal for me at the time. And the corporate office picked up my expenses as far as flying me out there and putting me in a hotel, because before that I had never stayed in a hotel. I'd flown a couple of times, so all this was really kind of a ritzy thing to me. It was like, wow, this is really neat. But while I was there, I was able to see how much Chick-fil-A Incorporated loved their operators and took care of their people. And that's when I fell in love with Chick-fil-A. And by the time I came back, I said, you know what, I want to work for this company. So here I am in college, I'm an art major, and not having any business school, and I said, I want to own a Chick-fil-A. It was quite a jump. And so I said, how do I do that? And so I started asking all the questions and finding out what kind of makes Chick-fil-A tick. And finally, I had sent all my application into Chick-fil-A. I mean, they wanted to know literally everything. Everything about you, everything about your blood type, everything about your family history.
Yes.
And they said, we have a store for you. And it happened to be in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I had a place called Eastland Mall. And it was one of the worst stores in the chain. I mean, it was bad. And I mean, the store itself was run well with Chick-fil-A people, but there was no people out there to serve.
Yeah.
And so, but it was a scenario where by me going out there, I remember thinking, you know, should I do this? Should I not do this? But if I do this, you know, I can show them what I can do. I can kind of prove to them that I can do what they need me to do, and it gets me my foot in the door.
Yeah.
And so I agreed to them, and I took that store over, and I was able to pull off a 38% sales increase the first 6 months I was there, and all of a sudden some people started looking at me a little differently. But I was still kind of clueless when it came to business. So I had a lot of, like I said, a lot of operators kind of came in to help coach me and guide me and kind of get me stabilized.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So they, they gave the new kid one of the toughest stores, and it was either sink or swim at that point, I imagine.
It was. It truly was. And it was I was treading water for a little while. I mean, I'll be honest. There were some times when I remember I actually remember opening up the newspaper going, I wonder where else I should work. I mean, because at a low-volume restaurant, you end up putting just a tremendous amount of hours in, and enough to where you couldn't really a lot of the terminology I hear nowadays is that you should be working on your business, not in your business.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't spend the time working on my business because they needed me to work in the business.
Yeah.
And we actually, like we had a product at Chick-fil-A called Chicken Q. If you've ever had a Chicken Q sandwich, that shows me how long you've been a fan of Chick-fil-A. And it would come in these bags, and it was a barbecue sandwich that was had chicken that was kind of all chopped up and mixed with barbecue sauce. And I literally would make enough each day for one sandwich. I mean, that's it, because that's all I would sell. And, I mean, it was that slow. And so I would literally go and during lunchtime, I would have me and one other person working out front and then one person working in the back. And then when things would slow down, like during the slow parts of the afternoon, that's when I would go out and do my recruiting or do my marketing or do other things. And then I would go home that night and I would work on stuff at home. My wife tells me all the time, thank you for doing all this before we got married. I was easily putting in 80 to 100 hours a week easily just to kind of make things go. But I was able to, over the time, start seeing slow progress as far as doing the right things over and over to where I was able to move forward a little bit till eventually another opportunity came and I gladly accepted it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the happy outcome of all of that hard work was that now you're a franchise owner and you're in a major mall and you're in a to-die-for location on another location. From what I can tell about the business world. So let's talk a little bit about extreme marketing. Now, in your book, you've described several. I don't want to give away secrets, so why don't you talk a little bit about some of the marketing that you've been engaged in over the last several years that's made you such a success here.
Sure. Well, I'd like to say I had this grand plan on how to market this restaurant, but I really didn't. It was kind of one of those when I got into Chick-fil-A, and it was for the first few years I really focused on running my business. Now there were simple things that we can do. For example, when you're at a mall, you would see somebody from Chick-fil-A hopefully sampling. You know, that is the number one way to get people to try our chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was at the mall, I was doing a lot of that. And I would do some couponing inside the mall. And that was really the extreme of the marketing because you're really limited by what the mall requires.
Yeah.
Well, when I got to the freestanding store, things were a lot different. And I remember one of the marketing people at the home office challenging me. And she actually made a comment one time because I was at this kind of a crossroads. I'd done some marketing here and there. And I was looking at this operator panel that was up front, and they said, we did this marketing that the home office suggested, and every single one of them said, I wish I would have made it bigger. I wish I would have done more. And so I decided, hey, if I'm going to be part of this group, I don't want to look back and say I should have done more. And I remember we had just rolled out our hand-spun milkshakes, which are phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said I should make a giant milkshake, and this girl looked up at me and said you should do a world record milkshake, and I said okay, I will. And so I decided at that point I was going to make the world's largest milkshake, and now I had just like everything else in my life, I had no clue what to do, and you know I figured it would be as easy as taking a recipe and multiplying it times, 100 and making this giant milkshake. Well, to go back a little bit, I should have known, but I remember years before that, my wife and I had a group of students from a local college over, and we wanted to make them a giant thing of Rice Krispie treats. And so we thought, well, we'll just multiply this batch by, 50 and just make a huge batch of Rice Krispie treats and make it for these students, and we're done. So we went up to the restaurant to make – it's truly simple. So so we went up to the restaurant, Chick-fil-A, because I had some bigger dishes and stuff there that we can use. And when I went to go make this, we put it in the giant mixer that we had to mix it all up and get all, nice and gooey. Well, when we turned that mixer on with the flat paddle in it, it crushed all the Rice Krispies. And so it ended up being Rice Krispie treats, but it was about the size of a pancake.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the times when my wife and I did something that kind of failed, so I kind of knew, okay, it's not as simple as just multiplying the recipe. So I kind of thought through what it would take to do this and all the different components in it, and we decided to make a 5-foot-tall milkshake that we can – 5 feet tall.
Yeah.
And we would hand spin it like Chick-fil-A wants, and we'll meet all the requirements that Chick-fil-A wants. And we'll give it away at a community event so that everybody gets a chance to try our milkshakes.
Yeah.
Now, the home office wasn't really prepared for that. In fact, they had some people that they requested would fly out and meet me because, there was all kinds of concerns that they had. Some of it was food safety. Some of it was other things. And so we kind of butt heads a little bit on that, but we finally agreed somewhere in the middle on it. And I showed them my plans. They agreed with it. We moved forward with it, and we actually were able to pull it off. The hardest part about that venture was getting a 5-foot cup.
Well, okay, I'll bite. How did you get a 5-foot cup?
Well, after we had went to all the normal places looking, and you'd think that Sam's or Costco would have a giant one, right? They have all these big things. No, they don't. this is where my art degree kind of fell into place, because I was literally going around trying to figure out how am I going to make this cup. And so I literally went from place to place, and I would walk in and say, can you make this cup? Can you make this cup? And I went to a plexiglass place, and I went to a welding place, and I went to all kinds of places. And for what we were needing it for, there was no place that could do it. And I was driving to Wichita, and I looked out on the side of the road, and there was this giant fiberglass pool. I don't know if it was a pool insert, I think it was, that they were kind of selling. And I was looking going, well, if they can make a 30,000-foot or a 30,000-gallon pool, surely they can make a 200-gallon milkshake cup.
Yeah. Only.
So on the way home, as I was driving, I looked up on my phone the name of a fiberglass company, and I went over there, and I put a styrofoam cup down in front of them that was the size of our medium cups, and I said, I want this, but I want it 5 feet tall. Can you do it? And he looked at me like everybody else does, and he cocked his head, and I thought he was going to throw me out of his place. But what he was doing was he was analyzing it, because he was an engineer.
Yeah.
And so he started drawing it on paper without saying a word, finally looked up and said, yep, we can do it. When do you want to do it?
you were called to the principal's office, it sounds like, by the corporate folks. They finally relented. You were able to, sometimes I get my greatest inspirations by driving on the road, and it sounds like that's what's happened to you here.
That's right.
And then you just made it happen. Wow,
that's right. The current book that I'm working on is called Get Off Your Ask, ASK.
Yeah.
Make sure I clarify that. And the principle is about, it's not just about asking people. It's also about moving and taking action. And so much in life, people don't do that. There's thousands of great ideas out there that are sitting there not touched because somebody will not move forward on it.
Yeah.
And so for me, as soon as I come up with an idea, before I can change my mind, I'm going to go try that idea. And so that's kind of what we did on that. And that worked out. It worked out beautifully. We learned a lot of things. I learned, you know, through that marketing, first of all, you know, we made this event as big as we could. We took the milkshake out in the community. We decided to we wanted to have it where it was memorable. And at Chick-fil-A, we like to say we decided to make it remarkable, something that people would remark about.
Mm-hmm.
And so we brought food out and fed everybody while they're out there. We had the cows out there. Then we brought in a helicopter, and we dropped parachuting Chick-fil-A cows. Now, I want to clarify, these are parachuting plush cows. Okay,
plush.
This
not real
yes.
cows.
It was not the WKRP thing. It was not real cows. It was plush cows. But so we had this helicopter fly in, dropped hundreds of these plush cows, and I still to this day have people come up and say, I was at that event. That was an amazing event. I got a milkshake out there. I caught one of these parachuting cows. That was awesome. But what we did there was we made an emotional connection with these people. And people spend thousands of dollars trying to advertise to you on the internet, on TV, to get you to remember their logo.
Yeah.
And when I did this event, I was able to touch them on an emotional level because they were able to go out in public, have a lot of fun, have something that, you know, they can tell their friends about, and, you know, they can post it online and that basically we made a remarkable event. And so that really helped educate me on the importance of making emotional connections.
Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful, wonderful point. My gosh. Now, is that one of your Guinness World Records?
Believe it or not, that was not. That was a precursor to my Guinness World Records because I didn't know how the Guinness World Records system worked. And so when I started looking up online to get it in the Guinness World Record book, I didn't have nearly enough time. So at that point, a couple of years later, we decided I'm going to go ahead and set a Guinness World Record and make a giant 840-gallon lemonade.
All right.
So at this point, I was a little bit wiser. So I went to my friend at the fiberglass place and brought that same cup, set it down, and said, okay, so I need one of these as big as you can make it. How big can you make it? And he said, we could probably get about 9 feet tall. So we created a 9 foot tall cup, and we had to freshly squeeze 11,000 lemons and create a giant lemonade.
Yeah.
And this time we did invite Guinness to come out. They came out. They covered the event. We set the record, and a lot of people ask, how did you squeeze 11,000 lemons? And what I did was, you know, there's a phrase I love to use that everybody wants to be a part of something big. They just don't know how.
Yeah.
And so we invited all of my customers to come be a part of this. And so we set up 10 lemon squeezers because at Chick-fil-A we freshly squeeze all of our lemonade. And we set it up under a tent, and we said we'll give free Chick-fil-A for a year to the team that can squeeze the lemons the fastest. And we gave them each 10 cases of lemons, and they squeezed them. And so, in essence, I was able to do it, make a fun, remarkable event about it. You know, even to this day, I have people come to me and say, I was on one of the teams. I remember doing that. And, you know, the losing teams got, they still got some free Chick-fil-A coupons and, they got a T-shirt, but they were walking around talking about, you know, that was one of the most fun events that we've ever went to, and, you know, we're so glad we could be a part of that. And, you know, when you look in the Guinness World Record books and that's listed, you know, for someone to say, hey, I was a part of that.
Yeah.
You know, not many people can say that, and because we create an opportunity for them to, you know, and they'll sit back and remember Chick-fil-A as, you know, I remember that situation.
Like you say, an emotional connection, not just going in and ordering a lemonade, but actually being on a team. Oh, I love it. You really hit a lot of buttons on that. That is remarkable. What when you come up with these ideas, what does corporate have to say about that?
Well, nowadays they probably just roll their eyes.
Yeah.
They're kind of used to it now. In fact, nowadays I'm actually on what they call an innovations team at the corporate office, and they bring me in and about 10 other guys who are, you know, just crazy guys, and they put us in a room and have us think up all these scenarios and basically come up with ideas on solutions.
Yeah.
But when I continue to come up with ideas, and so for my latest one, it was what we call the hamster ball relay. And a hamster ball is basically, it's a 9-foot inflatable ball. They're clear, and you climb in it, and you roll around like a hamster would.
Well, sure.
I remember years ago, I would watch these races, and I said, you know, we should have a Chick-fil-A race. But I wanted to have something that is family-friendly, that kids are talking about. You know, hey, did you go to that race, or did you go to do this? And so for a long time, I've been looking for ideas on a certain race we can have that is solely ours, that people are walking around talking about, hey, my kids went to this, or I got to go do this, or that was so much fun, and that that we can raise money for the community, for some community event or something, and to make it twofold, something that I can pull off, and really, like this year, I'll be able to pull it off and not have spent any money on it, and it'll be a great advertising venture, and people are going to be walking around and talking about it, but I was able to raise a few thousand dollars for another organization. There's no better marketing than that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was watching something on TV, and I saw these, they're called Zorbs, these hamster ball-looking things. I said, wouldn't that be hilarious if you saw 20 of these rolling down the street? Well, then I started thinking, well, what would it take for me to get 20 of these to roll down the street? And so that was the beginning of the latest concoction. And so this is our second annual year we're doing it. And we actually have a place here in Tulsa that has some really decent hills. And there's 5-man teams, and it's a 1.5-mile relay race. And they basically, one person has to be in the ball at all times, and the other people can help push, and they have to roll them down some hills where they'll just flop around. And it's just our way of saying, what can we do that's going to be fun, that's going to get us advertising, that's going to get people talking about Chick-fil-A. Yeah. And just like I said, this is our second year doing it, and it looks like this year not only will we break even, but we'll break even and probably make a couple thousand dollars for some charitable organizations here in town.
Yeah. Well, like you said, you're creating a remarkable event.
Absolutely.
Lots of buttons being pushed there. Now, that is remarkable, to say the least. I could only imagine there probably have to be some barf bags at the end of the raceway there, I would think.
It's not that bad. A lot of people think that it is that bad, that all they do is roll around head over heel. But really, it's kind of like if you're watching a hamster, how they kind of just pedal the ball. That's mostly what it is. But if you are one of the ones daring enough to go down the 3 ramps that we have that are out there, you're more than welcome to. But I was just at the fair yesterday, and I've been watching what some of these people endure. And it's just amazing to me. I wouldn't do it.
That's right. Well, let's change topics a little bit. I understand that one of the main focuses for Chick-fil-A and its business models is the on-site owner manager. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. They refer to us as owner-operators, and sometimes they refer to us as operator/franchisee. But that is the key to what makes the operator agreement with Chick-fil-A successful.
Well, tell us how that works.
Okay. I'm going to give you all the gory details. And so if I get sued from Chick-fil-A, then, okay, that's fine. It wouldn't be the first time. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes,
The way it works with Chick-fil-A, and this is all available on the internet, is you would pay, and you better be sitting down, $5,000 to be an owner. That's it. Mm-hmm. But Chick-fil-A would kind of pick the location. They actually own the building, a lot of times the land. It's all theirs. Mm-hmm. You're basically kind of a glorified manager that splits the profits with them 50-50.
Yeah.
And so the beautiful part about the way Chick-fil-A has it set up is they will actually take 15% of your sales, and then they'll split the profits with you 50-50. And so because of the way it's set up, it is in my best interest to market my store well.
Right. To be on site.
Exactly. Because the more I'm on site, the more sales the store is going to do, the more profits the store is going to make, which benefits Chick-fil-A Incorporated as well as myself.
Yeah.
And when you own a Chick-fil-A, they expect that this is your primary business. They expect you not to be involved with other businesses. They want your focus to be on growing that restaurant. And in a few situations, they do allow you to own multiple Chick-fil-A's. And fortunately, I'm in that situation.
Yeah. Well, that's and I know that, and not every franchise company operates quite that way, but that certainly sounds like a real strength of Chick-fil-A. I'm a real believer in the idea that much of who we are as a person is reflected in the businesses we own or run.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts about that?
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. I know that for Chick-fil-A, for myself, and then of course I'm the best person to tell you about me. So as far as Chick-fil-A goes, I am Chick-fil-A. In my community, I'm Chick-fil-A, and you know I proudly wear my name tag around. You know, whether my wife kind of teases me sometimes, says, "Why don't you take that off?" But she does. We'll be done, and I'll be done with work or whatever, and we'll be going somewhere. But it is amazing how many people will come up to me and say, you know what, I went through your drive-thru the other day, and it was cruising, you know. And occasionally they'll come up and say, no, you know, I had a bad experience, but it's extremely rare. But we have to sit down with our managers and say, you now work for Chick-fil-A. You work for Arthur Greeno doing business as Chick-fil-A. This is not going to be your normal fast food place. You need to understand when you go out and you're in the community and they hear that you work for Arthur Greeno, there's going to be expectations. And most places, you know, don't have that. I mean, most places of business, you're not they don't put that expectation on you. But I do for my team because it is true. In the Tulsa area, I do so much crazy things, you know, as you already have heard through this this message that, you know, I end up in the news a lot. I end up doing stuff for the community quite a bit. And so, you know, it is something that we explain to our management team is you need to be ready. And I've actually had a manager one time, he got pulled over by a police officer. And I'm not saying that, you know, that you need to do this, but he got pulled over, and I don't know if he was breaking the law or what was going on. And when they looked over at his name tag, they said, "Where do you work?" And he said, "Well, I work over at Chick-fil-A for Arthur Greeno." And he said, "You know what? I love his store. I love what he represents. You know what? You can go on your way." And so now, personally, you know, I've gotten tickets before. I know that doesn't work all the time, but that has happened.
That is great.
So.
Let me tell you what I encountered yet just this morning. I was at a store doing some business, and I overheard one of the clerks responding to another client and said, "My pleasure." I knew right away that this kid was a graduate of Chick-fil-A in some fashion or form or other. And I've heard that several times. I've even commented to my family about, I know where this person has has gotten their start simply by that little phrase, which I find just delightful anyway. What have you learned about yourself during your journey with Chick-fil-A as a counter person, as a manager, as a corporate guy, as now an owner operator? What lessons have you learned about Arthur Greeno?
Well, one of the things I've learned about me is, you know, I remember sitting back when I was younger, and I would look at all these people with all these different things, whether it's a fancy car or a big house or, you know, whatever it may be in their life. And, of course, I named some things that, you know, really have to do with, you know, maybe some rich people, and that's not the intention of it. But I would look at things that a lot of people look at and say these are dreams. And what I've learned over the years is that those aren't just dreams. Those are things that are reachable for every single one of us. And so it's really been my experience, not just with Chick-fil-A, but in general, is that if that's something that I want, it's sitting out there just waiting for me to grasp it.
And yeah.
Now, I may have to figure out how to get there. But you know what? There's always someone that is willing to help me get there. You know, there's always somebody that that knows more than I do, that if I can get to that person, that they'll be willing to help me get there. And what I've, one of the things I've found is that those successful people are more than willing to help me. One of my good friends, his name is Jim Stovall, wrote the book called The Ultimate Gift.
Yeah.
And he actually prints in every one of his books where he works and his phone number. And when he's speaking, he tells people all the time, please come, you know, if you have any questions or anything I can help you with, let me know. And very few of them actually call him up on it. And it's just amazing to me how, you know, I mean, this is a guy that speaks to, you know, thousands and thousands of people every year. I mean, he's had four movies that have come from his books.
Right.
And he puts it out there and says, hey, if you need help, give me a call. And him and I were visiting one day, and we're talking about that and about how it's amazing how some of the most successful people have the ability to help others because they put things in place so they can have time to go help people.
Yeah.
Because they have people that will take care of some of the maybe the mundane stuff so that they can free themselves up so that if, for example, Arthur Greeno wants to go talk to Jim Stovall, he can pull off to the side and visit with me.
Yeah.
But for some reason, in our minds, we tell ourselves, no, he's too busy. He has other things going on. I did a study on my Facebook recently that I said, if somebody was to turn around at a grocery store and they were purchasing something and they were a dollar short and they said, you know, could you spare a dollar for me? You know, I'm a dollar short. Would you give it to them? And every single person said yes. I mean, I had probably over 50 responses and they all said, oh, absolutely, no problem. Then I reversed it and said, would you, if you were in that position, would you turn around and ask the person for a dollar? Knowing that 100% of the people would do it, would you do it? And everybody, nope, won't do it. Nope, I won't do it.
Yeah.
And I look at that a lot of times as a reflection of, you know, a lot of times when it comes to our dreams and other things, all we have to do is ask for a little assistance to get where we want to be. But we're so afraid of what others are going to think that we choose not to even try.
Oh, that's a great point. Asking for help and the willingness to give help. I think many of us who've been around the business world or in any other type of community are more than willing to help. And if people will just simply ask. Swallow a little pride sometimes, but ask. When we got together to talking about our time here on the phone for the first time, you were talking a little bit about team building, and you have some interesting thoughts about that. Can you share just a little bit about what your concept of team building is all about?
Well, can you refresh my memory? What exactly were we talking about in general, or?
Well, I would say what you told me was you often set appointments with some very influential people.
And, got it. Okay.
You take your members of your management team or your work team, and you take them with you. Give us an example
yes.
of that, and what's come from that.
Yeah, well, what's funny is that, yes, to answer your question, that is one of the things I do. I like to go visit with ultra-successful people, and like I mentioned earlier, most mm-hmm. of the time when I go and ask them, there's never a problem. You know, I may have to work it into their schedule. Like I had visited with a gentleman who is the president of Quick Trip here in Tulsa. And mm-hmm. I think I had to call him in October and set it up for January because his schedule was so full.
Right.
But he was more than happy to meet with me. And one of the things I've learned to do is always take somebody with me because, you know, you've heard the story many times where people say it's lonely at the top.
Yeah.
Well, it's lonely at the top because you're doing it wrong. Huh? And I truly feel that way. It shouldn't be lonely at the top because if you're doing it right and you're leading the right way, you're helping people move to the top with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the things that I do with my leadership is how can I help you get where you want to be?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm going to visit with some of these people, I say, hey, I'm going to meet with the president of this company or the president of this company or this person, you know, who would like to go with me? And depending on what they do, it may be a different employee for it. Like my last meeting, I went and met with Mark Green. He's the founder of Mardell's.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that Mark Green likes to do is he also does a lot of – he likes to create movies. Well, one of the people that went with me likes to – create movies. She actually kind of does it on her own, does a lot of YouTube stuff, does some entertaining
things.
Now, the bad part about doing something like this is sometimes you might motivate your people to leave. And in this situation, just the other day, she kind of turned her notice in because she said, when I went and met with you and Mark, and there was two others of us as well, she said, I realized that I really need to be If I'm going to be doing what I want to with my dream and with the video and stuff,
yeah.
I need to get a job in that realm.
Yeah.
You know, now I can't stand there and argue with that at all. I hate to see her leave, but I'm glad to see she's doing something she's passionate about because, you
mm-hmm.
know, she's not that passionate about selling chicken. And you know, it was great having her, and it's time for her to move on. But my job is to connect these people. That's what I look at myself and say, you know, my job is to connect them and hopefully inspire them. That's one of the reasons I wrote my book, Dysfunctional Inspiration, was because
mm-hmm.
it's an opportunity for me to share with these young men and women that not only did I go through some struggles, but I may be going through either the same struggles you went through, or it could be worse, or it could not be worse.
Yeah.
But I grew up right down the street making $6 an hour at Chick-fil-A when I started, and if I can do it, you can do it. And
yeah.
so when it comes to team building, that's one of the things I'm looking at is how can I serve you? If you've been around Arthur Greeno at all, very long at all, you will hear me say, what can I do to serve you? And that
yeah.
could be as simply as connecting you. It could be as helping you move a piano. I'd rather not do that if we don't have to. But, you know, it's really about looking for opportunity. And even in my restaurant, when it comes to marketing and emotional connection marketing, you know, we're constantly looking for an avenue in our restaurant to serve our guests. You know, because
yeah.
People do come because they're hungry. But you know what? People also come in because they're worn out, because they need a break. I mean, you know, you don't go to a restaurant so that you have to clean off your table to sit down.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Great phrase there. Are there some special people in your life you'd like to give credit to before we close out here?
Absolutely. You know, my wife, Noel, is I love my wife. And Jim Stovall is actually working on a book right now. And he called my wife because he said, what is it like to live with a creative person, as creative as I am? And to be honest, I don't because I'm a little bit ADD, I don't remember what she said, but I do know that it takes a lot for her to live with me. But she is, you know, I have six beautiful kids, and a lot. Yeah. When I first started my Guinness World Record stuff, part of it was, you know, me and the kids were talking about Guinness World Record. How fun would it be to do this or do this? And so, I mean, they're constantly an inspiration to me, and I get to sit back and have my daddy moments and watch them grow and things click for them, or you know, they can call me on the carpet on things. And my wife, she's constantly behind me, and she knows that that I know that she's there to help me. When I say I'm going to do a crazy world record, she'll roll her eyes and say, I was expecting it. You look like you've been getting bored lately. And she knows that she's going to have to come in there as a detailed person that she is and take care of all the little details that I'll forget.
Okay. So, we need someone with detail, attention to detail, tied into your creativity. I understand. Well, it looks like we're running out of time, so I'm not going to have time for any live callers to post any questions for you. But this has been a great conversation. I appreciate it so much, Arthur. I do want to mention that whenever people listen to us, whether it's on the web, on iTunes, or live, they can reach you. Is this correct? At www.arthurgreeno.com.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and that's arthurgreeno.com. And your book is called Dysfunctional Inspiration. And it's available on Amazon.com or drop by the house, or how can people get a copy of your book?
It's available at Amazon.com as well as on a number of the electronic versions. You can also, if you go to my website, you can place an order for it, and I'll be happy to, write something silly in it and send it to you.
Oh, that would be great. Well, we'd love to know what's coming up next in terms of world records, so that would be a good place to make mention of that. Well, I really enjoyed our time. Arthur, thank you so much. For folks that are going to be listening, if you want to connect with Business Builders Roundtable for future calls or participate on our private blog, contact me at rodgiles.com. That's rodgiles.com. I think I've said that a couple of times. Give me your information so I can get you registered and get that information out to you. Well, we're all wrapped up here, and I want to thank you again, Arthur, for being our guest, and wish everyone a good evening, and thanks for being with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you. All right. Bye.
Thanks, Arthur. Bye-bye.